This is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. This podcast is dedicated to my fandom of Marvel Studios and everything happening in Phase 4 on Disney+. Today's discussion topic is the second episode of Loki, available for streaming as of June 16th, 2021. In this podcast, we talk about what we saw in Loki, but everything Marvel Studios has released up to this point is fair game. Sometimes we're so accurate with our speculation, we're surprised the TVA doesn't investigate. If you're the kind of person that wants to keep the goings-on of the secret timeline a surprise, this might not be the time to listen to a podcast about the show. You have been warned.
This is actually your last chance.
If you want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard, put your thoughts in writing, send it to us at one of a few different places. Our email address is thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. At The Way Phase 4 is our Twitter handle, and facebook.com/thewayphase4 is how we interact there. If we get feedback, we will share it.
The variant likes to stall for time, and eventually we'll catch the other one doing the same thing.
Today's point of discussion, episode 2, titled The Variant. And from first action to last scene is about 46 and a half minutes long, which is about a minute longer than the action from last week. The full description on Disney Plus for the episode, Mobius puts Loki to work investigating the variant, but not everyone at the TVA is thrilled to be working alongside the God of Mischief. The brief description is just slightly different. Mobius puts Loki to work, but not everyone at TVA is thrilled about the God of Mischief's presence. The director for episode 2 and all the episodes is Kate Herron, and writing credit for this one goes to Alyssa Karasik.
I beg your pardon?
There is a previously on segment following the Disney Plus snap. Rather than feeling like a clue as to what we're needing to know for this episode or what we're going to see, this previously on kind of feels more just like a short recap. Following that segment, the regular Marvel Studios fanfare theme is back playing over the intro, but it's still a green and gold logo at the end. And I get the impression that it's going to stay that way. WandaVision's first episode, you know, had the black and white transition. And then the second to last episode of that show had Agatha purple Marvel Studios. But I don't remember any color change from the regular red for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Just, I think there was an audio change in the second episode. The logo fades and we're at a Renaissance fair in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, in the mid-80s, 1985. The visual fade is accompanied by an audio fade-in of a fife and drum, a very Renaissance fair-esque type sound you might hear. There are people dancing around a maypole, which in Nordic cultures, and remember, in-universe, Asgard influenced Nordic culture heavily, the maypole sometimes represented the world tree, which in Captain America, the first Avenger, was on the carved mural where the Tesseract was hidden at the start of the movie. A Hunter and some Minutemen appear, and they're out of place, but they're looking for a variant. Since we're seeing this play out, we know it's Loki, but do they know it's Loki? It seems the TVA really isn't prepping their response teams. They're just sending one response team after a very, very dangerous variant that's been taking out teams one by one. This group just heads into the tent. The speakers start to introduce a battle for a princess, which I think is a little foreshadowing. Bonnie Tyler's Holding Out for a Hero starts to play, and there is indeed a battle, but it starts because Hunter C20 is enchanted by the character that is listed in the US or English version credits as the Variant. Now, I said that for a specific reason, and we'll find out later why. C20 doesn't disintegrate her team with her baton, but instead, she basically creates enough of a distraction and confusion so that the variant Loki can do the killing and steal more time reset charges. We see how time doors are created. The variant takes the phone-looking pad. It's a temp pad, I think it's called. Last episode, Mobius drew the stick figure that the French boy tapped to life, and then Variant presses time door and then run program. And then a time door is built in the, you know, in air. C20 is dragged through with the variant alive, And the Loki title card sequence begins. And though the letters change and settle on the same style combination of L, O, K, and I that they did in episode one, I'm going to take that to mean that there's no connection and no hints for us week to week in how that appears. I think it's just the way they created one blanket Loki tile card sequence, and that's what we're going to see every time. Loki is in the TVA reading Wake magazine, which I noticed in the end credits after episode one, and actually has a reason for existing that we're going to find out in this episode. Miss Minutes is quizzing Loki on basic TVA procedures. He's like taking a test, I guess, like a new employee handbook kind of a test. And I still feel like the show might set up that he either joins the TVA or just straight takes it over. I think these kinds of things are in there on purpose. And here, though, he fails the test, or at least that's what ends up on the screen when Mobius pulls him away from his training. Loki also gets a TVA jacket to wear. Hunter B-15 is running a briefing where they're going to head into 1985 Wisconsin to investigate. And she really enjoys giving Loki a hard time. She calls him a cosmic mistake. And Loki, you know, all the time, he keeps assuming he's the most talented version of himself. But to everyone else, they're assuming the variant is actually the most dangerous and the superior one. I hope they're going to reveal how the variant causing all the trouble became aware of the TVA and at odds with them without being arrested. Unless there was an arrest of the variant and then an escape, which is why the Minutemen and Hunters and even Mobius seem both okay bringing Loki back to a place he can use his magic, but more afraid of what the variant is capable of. I just don't know how the variant knows that the TVA exists unless somebody came and you know, maybe she got the drop on the very first group and figured it out from there. But it's, you know, I'd like to see how she first became aware of them. Mobius shows the group some of the different versions of Loki that exist in different timelines that they have apprehended. I saw one with a frost giant blue skin, one that appeared to kind of be monstrous, one almost comically different that looked dressed like a leprechaun or something, a bearded one, and there's one that apparently decided to win the Tour de France. During the Mobius briefing, Loki explains a little bit about his magic, how illusion projection and duplication casting are different powers. And we've seen him use those at different times in the movies, so this Loki is certainly familiar with how to use those magical powers, probably thanks to his adoptive mother, Frigga, of course. His mother, I think, was one of the ones that taught him a lot about magic. She said she was raised by witches, right? Well, Loki learns he's coming on the mission, but with no weapons. Mobius explains he's not afraid of him betraying him, especially if it means that he won't get an audience with the timekeepers. And this is almost assuredly an equivocation, because I don't get the impression Mobius even has that kind of dealing power, but he doesn't promise it, right? He just says, well, kind of like a parent, you know, like, well, I guess if you don't do it, then you won't get a chance to, you know, to get what you want, that sort of thing.
I see a scheme, and in that scheme, I see myself.
The group heads to the crime scene and crime time, and I thought we were going to get a scene where the Ren Faire wench that called out the first group for wearing the wrong kind of clothes, I thought we were going to see her point to this group to the same tent that they went to and like, oh great, more you weirdos kind of a thing. But we don't. We get an explanation why the group just can't travel back to the time of the attack. Mobius says the Nexus event means the timeline is changing such that you have to show up in real time, whatever that means. Any further explanations cut off by him chastising Loki for not watching the training videos, calling them propaganda. And that's one of my thoughts, is that's exactly what it is. And it's almost like that call away from the explanation of how time works was for us and for Loki at the same time. Like, they may not actually even understand why everything happens the way it happens. Loki then correctly answers that reset charges prune affected radius of a branch timeline, allowing time to heal all wounds. Now, if that's the case, I am wrong about erasing the whole timeline, but I still feel like that's also a lie and that it makes it easier for the workers to do their jobs, but we kind of see it in action in a little bit, so I just might be wrong. The group enters the tent and discovers that C-20 is missing and apparently a hostage. something the variant hasn't done before. Before they can fan out to look for her, Loki warns them, don't leave the tent. At first, it kind of seems like Loki's showing actual interest in their safety. Mobius gives him a little leash. Loki calls himself a servant of the sacred timeline, and he doesn't seek to overthrow the timekeepers, and the variant believes that he's the most powerful, and when Loki demands assurances for delivering the variant to them, Mobius finally pulls on the reins and says, yeah, he's just stalling for time. The Minutemen set a charge. We see it basically delete the stuff that's wrong with the timeline, everything inside the tent on the grass, but it does leave the grass. So this seems to me to be a nail in the coffin on my theory that it actually destroys the whole timeline universe. But remember, everybody at the Ren Fair saw them walk into the tent. I don't exactly understand how that, you know, yes, okay, it's a Ren Fair and people are dressing up and everything, but still their presence and their, you know, the people witnessing them definitely has to have some impact on the timeline, at least a little bit, right? Well, I do want to point something out that I noticed on the screen that we see in the TVA after the charge goes off and the group returns and the timeline is reset. Nidavellir, the Starforge that Thor ended up getting his axe after Mjolnir had been destroyed, and Sakaar both appear on the same screen that the Oshkosh time branch starts disappearing from. So they're both up on the same thing. So I think this is meaning that because of what happens later in the episode, that at that point in time, the variant has been going to those other places. We also see that they classify Hunter C-20 as missing in action. The scene now shifts to the judge's chambers, specifically Ravana Renslayer. She's the judge that saw Loki in episode 1 and said, you know, sentenced him, and then Mobius stood up and saved him, basically. She's got some creepy-sounding theremin music playing on a reel-to-reel tape player and a sound system in her office. It's a nice office. And Mobius is there with her, and just like before, he's very complimentary to her, but he asks her about some of her trophies. They've been brought back by analysts working for her since he doesn't remember bringing her a snow globe. And it brought to mind, you know, a little bit of a psychological profile of Killer. She's displaying them, but why? Does this indicate that she's in some way responsible for all the missions? I don't think she is. I don't think she has a hand in these missions, but it is odd that she's got this thing for pieces of worlds that have been reset, but not for Infinity Stones, just mundane pieces that can only have some sentimental value, and why is that? She mentions Mobius is not the only analyst working for her, which, since time works differently in the TVA, could it mean that Loki's also working for her already, meaning he joins the TVA from the past, and Mobius isn't aware because he's anchored to a certain point in the TVA's timeline? I mean, I don't know how it all works, but clearly there's at least one other analyst, and it could be Mobius himself. It's not clear if the TVA is itself on a sacred timeline outside of the time that we know in the worlds that it polices. Mobius mentions that they are his, and she says she keeps them because she approves the missions. Now, if this is a new trophy from a rival, could it be like a form of Kang the Conqueror, who we know is going to show up eventually in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania? There's something off about it, though. What else would happen if somebody... what if somebody doesn't go on the mission? They have to be approved? I felt like it was clear, you know, something happens that's not supposed to, the TVA responds, because they have to preserve the timeline. They have to be approved, though? When there's a really bad event that they don't prune in time, it becomes too big to reset. Well, what happens then? They start to discuss Loki and what, you know, Mobius wants to use him for. There's an odd scene with a drink that causes a coffee table ring, or a drink has been causing coffee table rings, and there's she wants him to get a coaster. Mobius makes a mention that maybe it was caused by the other favorite analyst. Ravana says, no, it's from him. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because the director seems to make a big deal out of it. There's a close-up of the coaster and the drink being placed down, except it's not put down in the same place. Now, if they were all drink rings from him, wouldn't it be in about the same place? It's not forward and backward. It looks like Mobius's arms aren't the correct length. If he's sitting down in the chair, they're not the correct length to be putting the glass down short of where the ring is. And not once, but, you know, also with the coaster, he puts it down short. So could it be there are multiple versions of Mobius that are different sizes? Or are they just different people who are different heights? What if she knows the truth and that there are many versions of Mobius, one that might be just a little bit taller, have a little bit longer arms, so her saying that all the rings are for him is actually true? I know it's getting a little crazy, but the conversation goes back to Loki, and Ravana wants to remind him, Mobius, that he's got a soft spot for broken things, and Loki's an evil, lying scourge. Now, is Ravana a broken thing? I don't know if Disney would just include a romantic foil for Mobius' sake, unless it's some kind of an anchor for him, like a something that keeps him focused on the reality and not all of the questions that seem to be right below the surface. Loki, in Renslayer's opinion, is a villain and always will be because she says the Time Keepers decree it. And that brings up yet another very important dialogue sequence. There's a lot in this scene. We find out Mobius believes the Time Keepers exist without having ever met them, but it's like a tenuous belief. Ravana talks about them as if they do, but maybe she's also never met them. She says she has, but maybe she hasn't. Is it a bureaucratic game of telephone where someone dictates the proper flow of time as the timekeepers because it seems better than a time dictator? And then, someone says that this is the end. Someone said, the person above me said it, so it must be true. Now, could that be Kang, or could it be Loki in one of his forms? Could it be someone from the future dictating time? How would knowledge of the truth be damaging to the TVA as a whole? Would all these people or all these workers stop working for them? Are they being enchanted? How many people know? Is it like a cult? Do people in certain positions know it's all a lie but go with it anyway because they're so high up? And then people like Mobius tirelessly work for the cause because they trust in a truth that isn't there. If this has always happened this way, how many times has it happened? And if it's happened this way, are flaws, tiny flaws, being discovered because of that repetition? Meaning Ravana and Mobius have been through time so many times that the variations from trips through time are just starting to blend together, or maybe some of those mistakes or changes are starting to leak through. Again, a lot in this scene. There's a lot of stuff that if you just sit and analyze it, you almost can go crazy from thinking about it so much. Renslayer signs off on the latest mission. Mobius notices another trophy, perhaps. The pen is from Franklin D. Roosevelt High School, and a Google search turned up notes on Molecule Man and the Secret Wars from Marvel Comics. Now, I think Marvel Studios has done a great job under Kevin Feige. It'll always take from the comics what it needs to tell the best story, and then the rest just gets relegated to parts of the multiverse that we might understand as having been reset by the TVA, right? But what might the blue pen end up meaning, though? It could be like so many things in WandaVision that we thought might be huge clues, but then actually are just a neat Easter egg for eagle-eyed viewers. At any rate, Mobius leaves and seems confident that Loki is going to be helpful.
Stay focused.
Eyes on the road.
The next scene is important because we see Loki is actually annoying Mobius. Remember, Loki is the version of himself who hasn't undergone years of growth. Mobius has been trying to speed things up, but even he can be frustrated. Loki seems to think he's the smartest guy around, right? Also can't understand how people like his brother can grow into a hero, how a guy who knows he's full of it like Mobius can work with someone he knows is a liar for what he considers the greater good. Loki hasn't learned that lesson yet. He wonders why Mobius would stick his neck out for him. Owen Wilson does a great job in his line reading and expressing that frustration. Mobius tells Loki it's either because he feels bad for him as a scared little boy, you know, when he was left as a frost giant, you know, or because he's going to say whatever he has to catch the variant. And then he says, you know, you can pick whatever one you want to believe in because it's one of those two things where just whatever gets you through the day, which means it's kind of the second, you know, kind of the second one.
Let me park you at this desk and don't be afraid to really lean into this work.
Loki is led to the archives for some desk work. He quickly gets bored of it. The very first page that we see him look past, now he flips it immediately at the start of the scene, so you have to freeze frame it. The variant name is Sylvie Laufey's daughter, which means there is a version of time where Laufey, the frost giant king, the abandoned baby, instead of being Loki, it must have been a girl. And instead of Loki, it's named Sylvie, because Laufey's daughter is different than Laufey's son, right? The next page appears to be the Nexus event analysis for the oil field murders of the 100 Minutemen at the end of last episode. And those are the only two pages I could even make out anything at all. But that first one might be important. Loki annoys a fellow reader, decides to try something else, heads to the archivist, which, or the librarian, whoever it is, sitting at the front of the archives. He tries sweet-talking, but it doesn't work. She won't let him see anything on the creation of the TVA or the beginning or end of time. And when he says, well, what can I see? The only files she lets him see are the ones about himself. Specifically, the capture and his life story. That's here that he reads about the destruction of Asgard, Ragnarok. He also gets a curious aha moment when he notices that zero variant energy was detected. He rushes off to find Mobius having a salad in the cafeteria, explains his hypothesis, Loki's hiding in apocalypses. Since no matter what the variant does before the apocalypse matters, because it's going to get wiped out, variant can come back time and time again to that point, because it's just going to get wiped away. Doesn't mention whether several versions of the Loki variant will be present. I'm a little confused, because what we see play out in the episode indicates it's not the first visit to that particular apocalypse for the variant, but also they only really need to find one, right? Since if you go back in time to that spot, it's going to mean the variant is present because there's no variant energy, unless it does mean that there is a problem, because if you don't remember at the beginning of the episode, there was a thing you have to come back in real time because of things that are happening and the time is branching. But there's no variant energy detected. Does that mean that there's also no, you know, they can come back? And why? What I'm saying is, why don't they catch the variant before the plan the first time they're visiting, unless repeated visits is just constantly branching time in that space? It's very, very, very confusing. Loki ruins Mobius's lunch with enthusiasm and borrows from his episode one stepping stone Casey the receptionist to do it. He borrows a drink to pour in the salad. Mobius initially has no desire to test his theory because he studied Loki. He knows that, you know, he often stabs people in the back. We get the scene from the trailers where it's mentioned he's done it about 50 or so times, you know, actually stab someone in the back. And Loki says, well, I'd never do it again. What Mobius can't trust, says Loki, is that Loki loves to be right.
Take me to a real apocalypse. Take me to Ragnarok. I'll show you.
Then comes the scene where we see Loki at Pompeii for the eruption of Mount Vesuvius from the trailers. It's 79 AD. Everyone's about to die, but no one knows it. Mobius says he's going to monitor the tempad. That's what his phone-looking device is. For variance energy. Loki sets free some goats, calls them his horned friends. I guess referring to his costume helmet with the horns on it. He makes a scene, speaking in Latin, warns the village that they're in. They're all about to die. Mostly, it's a short scene, but there's a little bit of cleverness to Loki when he tells them they're from the future. But then he wonders aloud if the TVA is from the future. It's almost like he's trying to find out a little bit more. He asks Mobius, but Mobius doesn't say anything, you know, whether he knows that they're from the future or not. You know, so what if the TVA exists outside of time, either before it, after it, or between time? Mobius watches on the tempad, and it turns out Loki's right. No trace. They get back to the TVA, and now they're both excited, and they're starting to look for naturally occurring disasters. Sudden, no warning, no survivors. It doesn't specify whether it has to be on Earth or the Nine Realms. Loki and Mobius start to bond over this. He falls asleep at some point at the desk. Mobius wakes him up, takes him back to the cafeteria, and this is where Loki asks him why he has the jet ski magazine. Mobius says, most things in history kind of dumb, get ruined eventually. But for a brief time in the 1990s on Earth, it was a beautiful union of form and function, the jet ski. He thinks it's cool, always wanted to try it, but he never has. Because he says, like, a TVA agent showing up on a jet ski on the Sacred Timeline would create a branch. Well, couldn't he just go to an apocalypse and do it? Now, my thought is, why not try out one before a disaster? Why not try one out in the middle, you know, go to a place in the middle of the ocean where it won't, where it doesn't matter? Because if what the variant is doing before the apocalypse doesn't matter because it's all going to get wiped off the face of the earth, why not do it in some place or on some planet where nothing is going to matter? I mean, I know butterfly wings, but if that was the case, then the butterfly wings would still apply to pre-apocalypse as well. Loki digs a little, asks why he reads about it, and, you know, if he's not going to do it. He says it reminds him of why he does what he does. Loki calls the timekeepers magic lizards again, basically not believing that Mobius could believe in the propaganda being so smart.
I don't get hung up on believe, not believe. I just accept what is.
Loki just can't believe that someone intelligent could believe in the timekeepers. It's an amazing defense of religion, really, what Mobius does. Who created you, says Mobius. He says it's all the same, and that existence is chaos, and we all try to make sense of it. He says he feels lucky he merged into a chaos that gave him his own glorious purpose. So turning Loki's phrase against him. The TVA is his life, he says, and it's real because he believes it's real. Loki questions if that means any of them have free will, and if all time has been planned out, and Mobius seems to still be in defense of his beliefs. He says the timekeepers are toiling away in a chamber, untangling the epilogue from infinite branches while they protect what came before. So does this mean that the TVA is actually near the end of time? He says, when they're finished, so is the TVA, and they'll meet in peace at the end of time. Loki says, only order sounds boring. He says Mobius was wrong before about him being a scared little boy because he knows that no one bad is truly bad or no one good is truly good. But the scared little boy comment sparks something in Mobius. He remembers the boy from the cathedral in France and the kablooey gum. The agents couldn't find anything particular about it, but as he says to Loki, now they have two variables, the gum and apocalypses. What those two things have in common is they both were regional to Earth from 2047 to 2051 in Alabama. Well, the gum is, and then there's, you know, all they have to do now is find an apocalypse that took place in that area. Mobius and Loki have a gentleman's bet on who can find the disaster first. They have a stack of files, so they split it up. The Roxcart disaster is the apocalyptic event that Loki finds. It claims it kills more than 10,000 human lives in Haven Hills, Alabama, a Category 8 hurricane, Class 10 apocalypse, annihilating the entire town. Mobius concedes defeat in the gentleman's bet, says, you're going to take my job if I'm not careful. And could that be what ends up happening? Loki becoming a variant analyst for the TVA.
You, I trust, but him?
Mobius goes to get approval for the raid on the Doom City's Walmart-like superstore. He gets very animated and excited about this being the opportunity to catch the variant. He's showing trust in Loki's methods and madness. Ravonna is still skeptical, warns Mobius. This time there's nothing she can do if it doesn't work out. Now, how much does she know? And how much control does she actually have? For all the bureaucracy, she seems to have a lot of latitude. And I'm wondering if that's actually a hint at how much power she actually has. Loki and Mobius prepare for the mission. Hunter B-15 comes in, takes weapons from Loki, which definitely would have been a mistake to just give him. Even if he can use magic already, just giving him his favorite weapons probably would have been a really bad idea. There's a briefing. The situation is explained. Reset charges are being stolen. Roxcart, it's a megastore warehouse. People in the town are trying to ride out the storm there, even though we know that they're all doomed. The Minutemen are given permission to prune the variant on site. Actually, B-15 says prune Vera Loki on site. Loki reminds them, make sure it's the bad Loki. But I get the feeling that if B-15 were in a position to just take them both out, like they were tussling or something, which one is which? She just would not feel good to, like, you know, knock them both out. A digital billboard for Haven Hills is wiped out by a falling tower, and we get a nice establishing shot of all the devastation that awaits the people in the store. Big waves, high winds, lightning strikes, flying debris. Time doors open up in the parking lot of the store, and the time team comes through. Loki uses a little bit of magic when they get inside to dry his clothes, and that really seems to unnerve B-15. I feel like we should get a little backstory for her. Maybe there's something there. With 6 episodes, though, I doubt we're going to see that kind of thing. Mobius wants Loki to come with him. Hunter B-15 wants to keep an eye on him directly and appears to be in charge of the field ops, so Mobius kind of has to go with it. He seems far more upset than Loki is, and really upset for, you know, an operation. But I think Loki knows this is an opportunity for him. I think he sees Mobius as just a little bit more clever. And though he tells everyone he can be trusted and he'll earn that trust, I think he's just planning on working on B-15 a little bit to see where he can create an opportunity to escape. Mobius even points it out.
Why is it the people you can't trust are always saying, trust me?
As Mobius teases B-15 about getting subdued by Loki in the past, we see the variant is indeed at this location and watching in the security station on the cameras. A temp pad and time twister are left propped up against the control board with a 20-minute timer, but I'm not entirely sure if that's for the storm or part of the variant's eventual plan. B-15 and Loki head into the greenhouse area, and Loki is indeed trying to pry into her, sweet talker. She shushes him because there's a man looking at plants. Strange thing to do in a storm, but the man drops a joke saying it's a hurricane sale and azaleas are half off. B-15 moves in, which doesn't really make much sense to me. Why would you do that? Why would you close the distance? The man grabs her on the arm and, kind of like the demon in the movie Fallen, transfer the enchantment spell the variant placed on him, like on C-20, from this man into B-15. Man collapses. Loki doesn't yet seem to realize what happened, but he quickly picks up on the word cues and demeanor change and realizes that B-15 is now the fugitive Loki. He says, me, I presume. The other Loki pulls a very Loki attitude by saying, please.
If anyone's anyone, you're me.
The scene shifts to Mobius and the Minutemen searching for the rest of the charges among the townspeople, and the Minutemen show no compassion. I wonder why someone like Mobius would, though, unless it's, you know, completely from getting the job done the best way possible. One of the guys says, basically, you know, hey, they're going to die. They should be scared. Mobius says, okay, not of us, though, right? One of the other Minutemen comes in then with a shocked look on his face and leads them to an office room where the hunter from earlier in the episode, C-20, is tied up, and she's muttering, it's real, over and over again. Then you go back to the Lokis, and the variant and Loki are teasing each other with little slights when Randy, a worker, comes in trying to direct him to the shelter side of the store, but B-15 grabs him, and the enchantment is switched to him. The variant is not impressed. When our Loki seems to indicate he's undercover and has an offer, the variant is ready to listen.
Come on.
Loki says he's going to overthrow the timekeepers and wants the variant to be his right-hand man. The variant doesn't seem to be, you know, doesn't seem to like being called Loki. You know, I don't know if that's a callback to the sheet before, but I'll get to that in a moment. Loki gets frustrated, even mentioning how he sees Thor could find it being frustrating. But this Loki doesn't realize Randy is helping the variant stall for time. Loki even mentions how he stalled for time at the Ren Faire, but he didn't get it. He doesn't get it yet. The variant refuses his offer to take over the timekeepers, and we see the real Loki is wiring a reset charge. Back with Mobius and Hunter C-20 in the office, she's still muttering, it's real, and it was real. And then she says she wants to go home. Mobius says, alert the infirmary. You know, she interrupts him, saying, no, I gave it away. The timekeepers, where they are, I gave it away, how to find them. So it's cleverly written. There's no pronouns here. So the reveal that we're going to see at the end of the episode is not given away yet. B-15 is radioed, but doesn't answer. She just starts to wake up from being released from the enchantment. Loki, still following the variant, still controlled by Randy at this point, sees a wired charge and says, you know, oh, okay, now I get it. Your plan's to blow up the place with the team inside. But Randy has, it turns out, given up control or the enchantment to a very large country hoss, as he's called in the credits. Loki doesn't fight this guy, only dodges and defends himself. Even when he picks up a vacuum, he only really half-heartedly swings it at the hoss. It's almost like he's stalling for time. He's continuing to taunt the variant to face Loki face to face. He knows the variant is stalling. Loki's just trying to provoke a reaction. He's thrown into a robot dog display. I don't know if that has any meaning or if there's some tie to the robot dogs and Loki in the comics. Country Hoss sets about wiring the charges and setting up the temp pad. Mobius and a Minuteman find a slowly recovering B-15, and she doesn't seem to know what happened. I don't know what happened. She's still waking up from that enchantment. Loki asks what the variant wants from him, and the Haas robot is done. So variant releases him, and she's standing behind Loki and somehow is projecting his last couple phrases through the TVs and speakers on the shelves. And see, I gave away the reveal with the pronoun there. The hands glowing green like the magic that's been used on Hunter C-20, and between the plant shopper, B-15, Randy, and the country hoss, the cowl comes down, and it appears to be Lady Loki. But remember, she didn't like being called Loki, and she says, this isn't about you. And other things that the Randy and the country hoss and everybody said, other things that were said, indicate that maybe there's something, maybe she's not actually a lady version of Loki. Maybe she's not Lady Loki. Maybe that Sylvie reveal actually will come into play. Well, the temp pad runs out of time and initializes the rows and shelves of reset charges that have been stolen. And I think I could count at least 40 when I freeze framed. And there's probably more than that. But if you estimate how many were up and down on the shelves, I would say at least 40. Definitely more than 20. And at first, it looks like the entire air is going to be reset right before an apocalypse that's going to wipe it all away. So it's like, what's the point? But then we see a small time door open up beneath one reset charge, then another, then another. The variant is time bombing different points in time. The sacred timeline, as it turns out. And we see the representation of the timeline going haywire back at the TVA. We see nowhere, Barcelona, Niflheim, Vormir, Vietnam, Colorado, Asgard, Italy, Sakaar, Finland, Ego, Titan, New York, Japan, Hala, China, Portland, Jotunheim. Things are bad. So bad, it looks like Renslayer is going to pick back up her baton. I think she may have been under A23 at one point because there's a helmet there next to the baton. Minutemen start swarming through time doors at the TVA. Back at the rocks cart, Lady Loki and her one-horned tiara wave goodbye to Loki, and she heads through a regular time door, not a small one for the charges, but it stays open. I think specifically for Loki. B-15, Mobius, and the Minutemen come, and one of the Minutemen come running down the aisle yelling for Loki, but he decides to follow the variant, stepping through the time door, and then it closes, leaving the team behind at Haven Hills. And the credits roll.
Damn it!
There's a lot to think about and a lot that happened in the episode. I can't possibly point out everything in audio form that you can see in the episode, but from the real world version of Miss Minutes, in the first couple of minutes of the episode, to Randy's performance as Lady Loki, when he was enchanted, everything in between that. The show's been doing just a great job. It answers questions that it raises for itself in one week, and then it asks new ones to make you wonder about it for next week. It's the kind of show that I think works better as a weekly release, where The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I thought, would have been better if they just dumped all the season episodes at one time and let people binge watch. Where there's mystery and theorizing and speculation to be had, that's when I think you leave it to sit. Let the possibilities work in your mind. And that means I can't wait until next Wednesday. There's so much to think about and so much questions that are just unanswered, almost rhetorical. I don't have an answer, but I like to discuss it. Well, I can't wait until next Monday, and at least that's my opinion. What do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. And you can also listen to our other podcast on most things Star Wars, This Is The Way Podcast. Episode 3 of Loki is going to air June 23rd. This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 2 of Loki. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.